My name is Arturo Chang. I'm a senior majoring in political science and literature at DePaul University. I am right now with the Department of Education, and I spent the last 2 years at the Chicago Board of Education interning.
And how old are you?
I am 21.
My name is Jezza Lotfi, and I am 20 years old. I will be graduating this year with a political science and French double major, and I'm currently interning at the Department of Education.
I'm Stephen Crouch. I'm 32 years old, and I'm a visual artist located in Washington, D.C.
Hi, I'm Jessica Ramser. I'm 20 years old, currently doing a semester in Washington, D.C., originally a student at DePaul, and I'm interning with Public Citizen.
I'm Alexa Grazioli. I'm 20 years old. I am a junior at DePaul University in Chicago, and I'm currently in D.C. interning for Rock the Vote.
My name is Ginger Gibson. I'm 29 years old, and I work in public relations in Washington, D.C.
Okay, so let's just start out. If you could just go around and tell me if you consider yourself a Democrat or a Republican or an Independent, and why.
I'd say that I consider myself a Democrat. It's hard for me to say which one, you know, mostly because there's issues on both sides that I don't necessarily agree with. I have issues mostly with the two-party system. I feel like we aren't able to get as close to our true opinion as possible. But in my case, I consider myself a Democrat because of the social issues that they are backing. I feel like they're the ones that most closely represent what I am concerned with and what I am interested in seeing convert into policy down the road.
What are the social issues?
Well, for example, the issue of minimum wage, raising the minimum wage, raising the minimum standard of living, equal pay for women, things like that. I feel like that is more likely to pass through in the Democratic Party than it is in the Republican Party. Also, I have to say I'm raised in Chicago. You know, that'll have a big effect on which way I lean.
I would agree with Arturo. I would say that it's very difficult to find something that really aligns with what you believe. And in a perfect world, I would say that I am an independent, but in the system that we have currently where the two parties dominate, we have to choose a side. And in that case, I would definitely say Democrat. I think there is this association with the Republicans of it being dominated by white males and the business scene, whereas the Democrats seem more inclusive, and that speaks to me.
Okay. Stephen, you voted more often. I'm assuming all you guys have voted since you were able to, correct? We just assume, take that for granted. Okay. So you voted more than, you've had more chances to vote than anybody at the table. How do you usually vote?
You know, I generally do vote Democratic. I don't feel that, you know, the two-party system necessarily speaks to this generation. But as the current system stands, that's what we have to vote within. So I wouldn't say that I'm necessarily a Democrat or a Republican. But, you know, obviously, if you're going to vote, you have to make that vote matter. So, you know, obviously, you would tend to lean Democratic personally, but
are there issues that are like threshold issues for you? In other words, the polling shows that your generation almost, not unanimously, but pretty monolithically supports gay marriage, immigration reform, believes in human-caused climate change. In other words, are there issues that if a politician didn't agree with you on those things, you really weren't interested in hearing what else he had to say? Or are you pretty open to anything?
I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say that I'm open to anything, but I mean, obviously these are social issues that are at hand now, so they're very relevant, and politicians should address them. And so, and I feel like they're trying to become more hip, and so they're trying to address these issues to get the young vote. But, you know, I feel like there's a lot of ground that needs to be made up, hopefully sooner than later.
And when you say that, are you thinking about Republicans?
I mean, I would say either way, you know. I mean, Republican or Democratic, they're trying to appeal to the young vote, but at the same time, they have a lot of ground that needs to be made up. You know, obviously you have young conservative people, you obviously have young, independent-minded people, and so parties have to try to appeal to that, but right now, I just don't know if that's necessarily happening quick enough.
Jessica, if there was a candidate, I mean, assuming a Republican candidate who was against gay marriage and immigration reform, would you listen to anything else they had to say?
Yes, I would. Definitely. I think we're so kind of fixed on, like, Democrats have to have this view and Republicans have to have this view, and it's very split down the middle. And I think, you know, there's a lot to be said from both sides, no matter what issue they believe in, whether it's I don't believe with them. I think, you know, they have their beliefs for a reason, and I think it's fair to hear them out. And then I, similar to what's been said already, I do lean Democratic when I vote, but more so I think a lot of work needs to be done, and I'm not a fan of the two-party system as well. I think more needs to be done to work together on these issues, and right now it's so separate, and really not a fan.
What, you've always voted for Democrat, well, you've only been able to vote once.
Right.
what would a Republican have to be stand for or say to get your vote? Just give some examples on some issues.
Currently an issue that I'm passionate about is campaign finance and overturning Citizens United specifically. I've just kind of, interning with Public Citizen and becoming more familiar with that issue. That's one that I feel like that's an issue that's very nonpartisan, and across the board you would think that people would be for campaign finance reform. That money could be used to go so many other places, but really it's undisclosed. You don't know where it's coming from. Corporations are considered people. So I feel like that's really tough. So right now, recently, the Senate vote, it was all Republicans that voted no against to pass an amendment to overturn Citizens United. So I would like to see more, especially issues that I think can be looked at nonpartisan, they should have that view as well. And you often see that the Republicans are the ones that are more reluctant to give into those sort of issues.
Alexa, how would you describe your political views?
I would consider myself more independent. I'm definitely open to both sides, but in choosing sides, I lean more Democratic, mainly because of the social issues. I can't lie and say that I'm very knowledgeable with, like, fiscal issues and things like that. I'm more focused on social issues.
And the social issues being which ones?
Mainly women's rights. So equal pay, like sex trafficking, things like that is what I'm really focused on.
And where do you find the Republicans, like, black, or why do you find them black?
I just think that it's a woman's choice, and some of the comments that have been made by certain candidates, and they're obviously not representative of the entire Republican Party, but I think it's frankly very ignorant, and I don't feel like you could tell someone what to do with their own body if you can't experience it.
And you voted once, right?
Right.
Are you sure you're going to vote next time?
Yeah.
And have you been involved in politics? Active in a campaign year?
I've interned for Congressman Mike Quigley from Illinois and Congresswoman Tammy Duckworth. So I was in their Chicago offices. So that's the main experience I have with them. Yeah. I haven't actually, like, worked on a campaign during an election season or anything like that, but I've worked in the offices, gone to events, talked to constituents, things like that.
Ginger, you're older, you have a job. Sometimes people say that, like, having social issues at the top of your list is a luxury for when you're in college, and now you have all sorts of economic challenges like any other working person. What are your top concerns?
You know, I think that, I lean left. The benefit of living in Virginia, I don't have to register with a party, so I don't have to slap an ID on it. But I think that the social issues matter a lot to me, particularly on certain levels of government. So I voted in the last local election for an independent who was really a Republican who won in a very blue county in Virginia because I liked what he had to say on the local issues better. And I liked breaking up the one-party control of our county. It was all Democrats. I didn't like the idea that all Democrats, even if I am one, controlled the county board and voted for an independent instead. But I don't think you stop caring about social issues when you get older. I have a pretty liberal view on taxes. I'm willing to pay them if they go for something that's worthwhile. And I think our generation is that way, too. I hear a lot of people who are older talking about no new taxes, no new taxes, no new taxes. That, to me, is an awful argument. The argument is, what am I paying for? If I'm going to have better education, we're going to put schools in that are good in educating the doctors, the lawyers, the cops who are going to serve me when I'm older, I'm happy to pay the taxes. If we're not paying for good programs, then I'm not happy to pay the taxes. I don't want someone to say that. Gay marriage is a huge issue for me as a straight woman. I think that it's a civil rights issue of our time. Immigration is a big issue as a Hispanic woman, and abortion as a woman. And those are issues that I just can't ignore. But that being said, you know, I'm in a bi-political relationship. I have a Republican boyfriend. I know lots and lots of Republicans. I think a lot of those social issues, the young Republicans are much more in line with liberals than older Republicans. And I voted for Republicans who have said, I'm pro-gay marriage. I'm pro-choice. I'm pro-immigration. And I think for that reason, does my voting stay long-term just to the Democratic side? Maybe not. If I start to see more Republican candidates who get in line on those issues.
In the national election, what are the three or four things a Republican would have to be for before you would even consider voting for him? For president.
For president, they'd have
or
to be.
Even for senator. You know.
For senator, they'd have to be pro-gay marriage. They'd have to be, I mean, I'll use a broad term, pro-science, because I think that covers a lot of things. I think we hear an unfortunate appeal to an anti-science ideology that talks about birth control that's not an abortion patient being an abortion, that talks about climate change not being real, that talks about things that are just so contrary to scientific discovery. So they have to be pro-science, and that covers, I think, a large number of things. And then they'd have to be pro-reason. And I know that's another broad set of category, but as a young person, I am tired of watching gridlock in Washington. It is infuriating. I just want to sit people down and be like, act like grown-ups, because I don't see grown-ups. And I think that somebody who's not going to draw hard party lines is going to be way more appealing to me than somebody who isn't. So those aren't exactly issues.
You blame the Republicans for that more, for gridlock, it sounds like.
I do. And I might be just old enough to remember, you know, watching compromise happen under Clinton and watching compromise happen under the Democrats when they controlled the House. Nancy Pelosi doesn't get the credit I think she deserves. One, for just being a wonderful leader and the first woman. She also doesn't get the credit for getting stuff done. And John Boehner's not getting anything done. And people will say that, yeah, I don't get it. They don't want to get things done, and that's why. But I think that it's Republicans that have just sort of drawn a line, hard line in the sand. I don't get everything I want. You know, if it were up to me, I'd live in a mansion and I'd never work and I'd win the lottery. Maybe I'd still work, but life would be, you know, a lot easier. But there's got to be some give and take, and I don't see it from Republicans. It's infuriating. It's like one of the most maddening things I see in politics.
Even though I do lean Democratic, I wouldn't blame Republicans for the gridlock we see. I blame that more as a systematic issue, as a result of our type of government. You know, the way it's structured, it's prone to create gridlock, but the problem for me, I expect gridlock. The problem for me is partisanship in Washington, which when you have an extremely partisan Washington and working within a system that is prone to gridlock, you're going to have a government that doesn't get anything done, and that's what we're getting right now. I think the issue for me is that the Democratic Party aligns with what I am worried about, and I am hoping that they will get it done in a government that's prone to not do so. And the problem is that Washington just does not reflect the true American, the way America feels. You know, research shows that America is not as partisan as we say they are. Everybody says that we're all divided, and it's not true. We are willing to pay for social programs. We're willing to pay the taxes for it. But that is not transitioning into policy. And a big reason for that, for example, the issue of minimum wage. The Reagan administration affected the issue of minimum wage during his administration. I think it was 1973. The value of minimum wage dropped. And that was because of the Republican Party. That was their agenda. So that's an example of why the Democratic Party aligns more with my issues in a gridlocking system.
One of the biggest divides between the two parties is the issue of just government. You know, do you see government as something that is helpful to you or is like too big and too oppressive?
I'll jump first. Okay. I think that I do see government as helpful. And I actually disagree a little bit with something I said earlier that Washington doesn't reflect the U.S. I mean, we send these people here, right? They don't just fall out of the sky and land in Washington and start writing laws. And to some degree, it does reflect. Anyone who's ever sat at the kitchen table on Christmas and argued with their uncle about politics like I do knows that there's a lot of partisanship, there's a lot of disagreement. I think it's caused by a lot of different reasons. But I think government in itself is a good thing. I think that it does good things. And I think that if you write it off that's not good. And I think admittedly that's our generation does see the benefit in government programs. We do see the benefit in helping people and doing it. And just to sort of go off on another tangent, it's also like a little bit of the secularization of our generation. We're way more secular, I think, than our parents' generation. And where our parents' generation might have said, you know, the church is supposed to feed hungry people, I don't think the church is supposed to feed hungry people because I don't really think the church is going to do much of anything. I think that we as a society should feed hungry people, and that a really good way to do it is through the government.
About other people's views on government?
I would certainly say the government is helpful. I wouldn't, you know, advertise anything other than having a government that helps the people. However, I think that once we elect these officials, it may have been our choice to put them in those offices, but once they're in those offices, there's a game they play with each other that also kind of really ruins the system that we were hoping to have when we first elected them. And I think that perpetuation of that through the election system and through the kind of just through the methods that they use within the House and the Senate are just really disastrous when it comes to the end game.
Do you expect to need support from the government, whether it's subsidized college loans, health care, Social Security, or would you rather the government do less for you?
Yeah, I mean, most of us here probably have college loans. And I think Social Security, I think it's good to have a safety net. You work towards it, and I think it's about, you know, helping your elders and things like that. So I want to pay in to it for my mom. I want my kids to pay in for it. So I do think that government is a helpful thing.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, obviously the government is a tool that we have to have in our society. You know, it gives us laws, it gives us rules. But I would also, you know, like to point out that, you know, the government is very you know, there's just a lot of bureaucracy involved where there's a lot of, you know, government bailouts that are happening, and this is money that we're paying into the kitty that we'll probably never see in our generation. We have politicians that make, you know, exorbitant amounts of money, and, you know, these are taxes that we're buying their Lexuses, we're buying their McMansions, and, you know, obviously I feel like that's a system that's just not working for working class people. I mean, it's almost like a neo aristocratic society that we've built up over the past 50 years, and our generation is the first generation that's, you know, kind of addressing these issues, and we're having to deal with the blowback from the rules and regulations that they put, you know, forth, you know, 40 years ago.
Go ahead.
I was going to add one more thing from another perspective, being a little older. I came out of college, and then the economy crashed. And I watched people lose their job. I walked into my office every day not knowing if they were going to close the doors and turn us away. I mean, they were hemorrhaging employees. And I watched people who would have never gotten by had it not been for unemployment and had it not been for long-term unemployment. And fortunately, thank the stars, I was never in a situation where I needed that government assistance. I kept my job. But I know that fear of waking up every morning that you could lose your job and then you can't pay the rent, or people who had kids and had to pay their mortgage who all of a sudden didn't have jobs. And I think that's going to probably forever change my perspective on government assistance like that, just because I saw how bad it was and how desperately people needed it. And now I can't imagine a situation where you would ever cut programs like that, where people are elderly people who lost their retirements. I mean, that Social Security kept lots of people who were, you know, trying to make ends meet in other jobs and lost them afloat.
You guys are probably the first generation who won't do better than your parents economically. I mean, there's a lot of definitions of doing better. But do you worry about the economic future, or you're just not old enough yet to do that? Or maybe Stephen does. I don't know.
I was actually going to speak right to that. Oh. You know, she said she experienced it. But even being 9 years younger, I saw my parents go through that. My dad is a labor worker, and, you know, I saw unemployment, you know, help us so much growing up. And, yeah, I do fear that, especially, you know, thankful for the loans that the government is giving me. But where is that taking me in the next 2 years? You know, am I guaranteed a job anymore? No. And I am scared for my economic future. And part of the reason I'm in D.C. doing a program here, you know, you hear good things about the program, and I just to come here and understand it myself and see kind of what's going on, because I am scared for, am I going to have a job? Am I going to be economically stable?
Did your dad lose his job?
So he has gone through just periods of unemployment. I mean, the labor union it's tough. Sometimes there's jobs, sometimes there's not. It depends on the weather. There's so many union workers out there. Currently is working now, but has gone through periods of unemployment, which, you know, there's a couple months that you're fine and a couple months that you're not. So definitely living that paycheck to paycheck, I have felt firsthand with my family.
Let me ask you about one issue that at least one particular Republican, Rand Paul, has talked a lot about, and he feels it's going to resonate with people your age, which is privacy. You know, the NSA. I mean, what do you think about that? You guys give a lot of your private information to Google. I mean, is that something that you think about or not a big issue?
I mean, I think that's a huge issue. I mean, security, just all of our information being in the cloud, these days, it's just like the other day my friend pointed out the fact that U2's new album is on my iPhone and I had nothing to do with that. I mean, that's, a decision that people are making for us. And, it's obviously going to be a big issue in the next 10 to 20 years. I mean, I feel like, for security reasons, I actually lean more Republican because they want less government. And so with that, becomes kind of less of the security issues of people having my social security number. But, as technology evolves, these are just things that are going to happen. I mean, it's inevitable. You can't keep this information from the big corporations.
You're kind of a populist libertarian. what about...
I was going to say that I disagree that the Republican Party provides better security for us. Because in terms of... Yes, they want less government, but... In terms of what they view is necessary for American foreign policy as far as security, that is more invasive than the Democratic Party. So you have, for example, when 9/11 happened, obviously everybody was worried, everybody was scared. I was too young to really, remember. But they created huge governmental power in foreign policy, which invaded privacy, took away our rights to be in court at the time. And when I think of the Bush administration, that's the first thing that comes to mind. And when I think of Bush, first thing that comes to mind is Republican. I would say that I lean Democrat in security specifically because of the policies that they are looking to push in terms of security and in issues like, for example, net neutrality, issues of net neutrality, where, for example, if you're willing to back big corporations, give big money to big corporations and let them merge, that is Republican policy. And one of the big issues that I have with the Republican Party is corporate welfare, which is, for example, earlier you were asking what would a Republican have to say, that would be one of the big ones. It would have to be not backing corporate welfare, understanding that what we are doing is hurting our economy, making it not, it's keeping it from being sustainable. And that translates into foreign policy and security as well through other issues that Republicans bring up.
Are there any political figures on the scene today? Rand Paul, Hillary Clinton, Paul Ryan, Ted Cruz. I mean, I'm just anybody. Is there anybody that you find appealing? Elizabeth Warren? Anybody that you find exciting and appealing?
I really like Elizabeth Warren. I don't think it's realistic that she can win. I don't think she can compete with Hillary Clinton. But if Elizabeth Warren ran, I think she would be the only candidate I would volunteer for. And obviously, I mean, you can tell because she backs the issues that I'm behind, Other than her, I really can't think of... She was the only politician I was willing to intern for during my time here in D.C. So, I mean, I guess that speaks for itself.
Anybody else? Anybody that they find interesting on the scene right now? Hillary?
Yeah, there are people I would vote for, right? There are people that I like. There are people that I find appealing. I think Nancy Pelosi is great. I think she's, history will hopefully treat her better than current events have. But on both sides of the aisle, I find much of the conversation focused at my generation to be more poll-tested pandering than it is genuine connection. And I think that it could partly be that we hear about the Republican Party doing this more. How are they going to win young people? How are they going to win Hispanics? And so I then find it to be really insincere when they say things and attempt to win young people or Hispanics or women, a category of which I fall three into. And so I just don't find it really sincere.
You mean example?
I think when we look at, like, that big study the RNC did and they came back, I think some of the people who got involved in immigration in Congress were doing so to win votes. And I found the debate within the Republican Party about whether or not to support the Senate bill, particularly on the House, because I thought the Senate bill was – people really cared, some border state Republicans really getting involved. The House, it was, what is this going to do to 2016? And to me, that's not a sincere discussion or interest in the issue. And maybe I'm naive, and I'm never going to get everyone to care, but it doesn't really make me excited anyone. You know, Rand Paul, you talked about Rand Paul, did that piece on Ferguson that, you know, was supposed to be, oh, the police state is bad. And I kind of just didn't, like, it just felt like he was running a campaign, not talking about something he cared about. And maybe it's because we're too young. Maybe, like, the John Kennedy of our generation is, like, running for a city council somewhere, and I just haven't seen him yet. But at this point, I don't see anyone that really excites me.
I would say, as an Arab American, when you talk about privacy and when we look at what's happened in recent years right after 9/11, we've seen the wiretapping of Arabs, all of their information being taken and used in different ways to abuse. It's an abuse of power. And so when I think about that and I think about Republicans trying to use the privacy issue to get more voters, it's interesting to me because, as you know, Arabs used to vote Republican, and they used to be very conservative, and they would mesh with them on that. And so now it's interesting to see that maybe they're going to get the Arab vote back. Although I don't really agree with the Republican Party, it is an issue that I support, and I think that they're on the right track with.
You know, I kind of feel like politicians at this point of time, they rely on being very beige. They don't have any kind of stance either way. And, you know, that's how these guys are getting kind of pushed into, you know, politics. I mean, you look at Obama, he had no vote, like, either way until he went into the presidency. I mean, it's you know, it's like politicians are almost negatively impacted for having an opinion, you know. Like Rand Paul, he probably doesn't have much of a chance at, you know, being the president because he voices an opinion, which, you know, in all honesty, is a breath of fresh air.
Speaking of Obama, that's a good way to end in the last 10 minutes or so. Disappointed? Happy? What do you guys think? It's 6 years.
I'll start while everyone thinks. I'm verbose.
No one says anything because he's not doing it.
Wait. Can you just wait? Can you repeat that?
Oh, I mean, you know, the fact that no one's answering the question should speak, you know, loads. It's just no one has an opinion because he's not necessarily making any progress. You know, everybody had this high hope that he was going to be this presidential candidate that was going to make all these social reforms. But once he got the seat, then he just kind of sat there, you know, and there's a lot of, you know, filibuster things that slowed his progress, but, I mean, this is politics, you know? This is exactly where we are right now.
I wouldn't say that he isn't doing anything or that there has been no change. I would almost say that it's gotten slightly worse. I would say that although he may gone in with the good intentions, when we look at especially foreign policy to me and his very hands-off attitude with Syria and much of the Middle East, we have a huge problem on our hands right now, and it's because of his inaction. And so when we look at, is inaction worse than action? It's not, because you end up with a worse problem. And so I would think that some of the decisions he's made, whatever intentions they may have come from, have resulted in bad problems arising.
Go ahead.
I'm going to be the one to disagree here. I don't regret the both times I voted for him. I'd vote for him again if I would go back and do the last two elections over. I disagree that he's in action on the military. In fact, I think he might be remembered more for military than anyone gives him credit for now. He's used more drones than anyone. I mean, drones are such a far movement in the world of war engagement that when we look back at, like, the history of militaries, like, the use of drones, unmanned abilities to, like, strike people on the other side of the planet is unbelievable. And with little debate and little discussion, I mean, like, the liberal part of my brain sometimes screams at the notion of engaging in unmanned war. And there are, like, conventions that have, like, discussed it. But the other liberal part of my brain says, thank God we're not putting people in harm's way anymore. I am more than pleased with the fact that he's disengaged in the Middle East. I don't want to see us at war anymore. I remember when the Iraq War started. I remember how opposed I was to it at the time. I remember crying when George Bush got reelected that we were never going to get out of war. And I'm actually happy to see a more diplomatic approach. I'm happy with the healthcare law. It's such a huge accomplishment that would have never been done otherwise. I'm happy with the economic stimulus. I mean, when I lived through the crash. I was out of college in the crash. I was trying to make a living, friends trying to get a job. Without the stimulus, I can't imagine how bad it would have been. He doesn't get credit for it. Sure, it didn't fix everything, but we were at 6-point-something unemployment now. We'd still be at 10 without it, I think. And I think, I hope history treats him better than current events have, because I think when you look at the totality of what he's done, it's a lot better. Yes, we're still bad. Yes, it's still frustrating. Yes, people still can't get jobs. And I think that that frustration plays out in how people view the president, but I don't think it's a fair assessment. I think he's been a really bad salesman in office. I think he does a really bad job of selling his own accomplishments and what he's done. I think that's part of the problem. But in terms of looking at the totality of his presidency, I'm pleased with it. I'm glad I voted for him, and I'd do it again.
I think a problem is, too, there was sort of like a mystique built up around him because he was the first African-American president. So I was in eighth grade when he was going against Hillary Clinton and things like that. So I think that there is a lot more expectation on him. And I actually read an article, I think it was by the New York Times a few years ago, where it's like, you know, if he engages with like welfare issues, it's seen as him favoring African-Americans because he's African-American. But if he's not, it's like, oh, he's racist and he doesn't care about his people kind of thing. So I think that's also an issue, too, that unfortunately does factor into some of the reputation. It's just kind of hard for him, and it was like he campaigned on hope and change, so you kind of expected a complete overhaul of the system, and then unfortunately it's not as realistic or as easy to get things done that way.
Similar to going off what Ginger said, right, I think from the whole, he has some great accomplishments that people don't give him enough credit for. And also, I think no matter who the president was, a lot of these are systematic issues, and you have to look at, like, people, I think, don't understand how, you know, even the executive branch works. Like, yes, he is the president, but think about the Congress he's dealing with and just, like, the gridlock that we spoke about earlier. You know, it's hard to get things done when you don't have Congress working with you to get those things done. So I think that's a big issue that people often overlook when, you know, if we're going to say Obama, you know, would I vote for him again? Would I not vote for him again? Was he successful, unsuccessful, that kind of thing. But I would vote for him again, too. I think the health care, definitely on board for that as well. So I think I would vote for him again.
I agree with everyone who's spoken in support of Obama. I think that we are unable to say what he's done, but that's because I think every generation would be in the same position. Everybody talks about Kennedy. Everybody talks about, like, Reagan, for example. Everybody talks about how Reagan was such a popular president, which is untrue. That's not true. The media manipulated his image, and now we have that idea. Same thing. Obama came in. He made everybody think, you know, run on hope, run on change. We are romanticizing the power of the president in this system. And if you say, are you happy with Obama? What has he done? You can't answer. That's because it's a systematic problem. He has passed health care reform, like you said. That's a huge issue to me. The fact that he didn't act in Syria, I think, is a result of him following public opinion at the time in the Middle East. Like Ginger is saying, I don't want another war. That's how most Americans felt at the time. And it's a tough issue. Now we're dealing with ISIS. It's a big problem. But the truth is that at the time, he was following public opinion. We talk about delicate representative politics. Americans argue that the president doesn't do what Americans want. He did what Americans wanted, and now he's getting stuff, you know, crap for it, and saying, why didn't you deal with it in the first place? You know, I think that we tend to romanticize the president. We tend to romanticize his position. And we assume that he has these superpowers to change the system. And that's just not true. You know, the executive branch itself only has definite powers, which executive power is huge, but that's foreign policy power. Congress controls domestic policy. And we forget that. So I think that Obama gets much more blame than we should. And I also think that we are prone to say he hasn't done anything, but we ourselves are not able to respond to that same question about other candidates.
Is there anything, just in closing, that you guys think it's important for the public to understand about your generation's political attitudes, views, you know, experiences?
I think we pay attention way more than we get credit for. I think that there's this misperception of millennials as being selfish, as being unengaged, as not working hard, as being difficult. I think that's wrong. I think anybody who's grown up in my years and years after me that has to deal with this economy knows that that's wrong. We've worked really hard, and we pay attention. Sometimes we pay attention more than the older generations, and we're going to keep paying attention. And I think that our viewpoints are not locked in. We're not going to be monolithic, like you said, from the start. But I think that we are going to pay a lot more attention moving forward.
Just to touch on that, too, like she said earlier, you brought up the question, like, you know, college students caring about social issues, and here she is 9 years later still caring about these same social issues. And I think that as millennials, we have a voice and a strong voice, and within the next couple of years, especially as we get into our careers and prominent roles, that you'll see that throughout the United States and in policy.
And I think these issues are so important to us, too, because growing up, we were exposed to them more. So as far as, like, gay rights, when my mom was growing up, you know, that would have maybe been the secret in the family. You didn't really talk about it. But growing up, as you know, I knew my uncle was gay, and it wasn't a big deal to me because I'm five. I don't know the difference. So I think that's why it's so important, because then as you get older, you realize that there are people that are against it, and you're kind of like, why? It hasn't really caused me any harm. It doesn't really cause you any harm. So I think that's why we're so focused on issues like that.
One thing that I keep thinking about when I think about politics is that I think that we live in an age when it's trendy to be cynical. It's trendy to say, you know, politicians are all corrupt, they're all superficial, they don't believe what they say. But I think that politicians haven't changed as much as we're saying they have. You know, we keep saying that they don't believe in it. They're campaigning. They want to win a position. When you say that they don't believe what they say, you're really being unrealistic. They need to get voted in, and that's the case. You know, there are bigger systematic problems here to deal with. They're ontological problems within the American government, and that is bigger than what we are seeing today in our generation. I think that's something you have to keep thinking about in terms of government.
I'd say look out for us. I think, like he said, a lot of people seem to think that it's trendy to be either cynical or optimistic about the political system as it is currently. But the difference with us is that we're actually doing something about it. A lot of us are involved. A lot of us who see problems are deciding to get involved and make careers out of it and go into it and change it because we believe that we can. So I think that's an important part of this, and we'll see it happen in the future.